Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Miller Lite. Triple Hops Brewed Miller Lite. Taste greatness.
Did I have that I don't have? What did he like that I've lost track of? What did I do that I don't do the way I did?
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 444. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Let me just first off say how grateful I am to be working in this amazing GLBT community, and especially in the city of Chicago. I think this is such an exciting city for anything that you might be doing, but especially as a part of our very active GLBT community. And it's been a great year. I look forward to here in December looking back over 2011 and looking ahead to 2012. I can't believe it. We are in the final stretch. I know many of you may have traditions around the Thanksgiving holiday, and I have one that I'm going to indulge in, which is a little sun and sand and surf, and that's just how I roll. but I hope that wherever you are, that you are with loved ones or friends or in a place that makes you feel very happy and grateful in your life. And you know, I have to say, it's been an interesting twist this year, right, with the new talk show hosts on television. And I really have continued to enjoy Rosie being in Chicago, and I'm looking forward to going and watching a taping next month. And I love that she is starting to become a part of our community and having more and more people on who are passing through town and going to see theater in Chicago and all of that. I hope she'll go to some of the smaller houses. I know she's gone to Broadway and Chicago shows, but Anderson Cooper is also somebody I've spoken with, of course, and I guess itinerantly a part of our community too, even if he's not out in a big way. And you know, he's really tackled a lot of different issues. I mean, his show, very different than Rosie's show, very different than Ellen's show. But I was really impressed this past week that he did an entire show on transgender kids. And, you know, transgender stories have been all over our news of late. And there's more stories today about protections and also great sadness around crime, around transgendered people and attacks. But, you know, we are making progress there. And one of the biggest progresses we are making is just continuing the conversation, the visibility of the trans community. And so Anderson Cooper had this show on with so many young trans kids. You know, he presented the parents and three young girls who were born male, who ranged in age from 6 to 11, and really impressive the journey that they're going on. And, you know, these are just ordinary, everyday, pretty much middle class, mid America families, who thank God are listening to their kids and really trying to explore what avenues there are and how they can help their children, because statistically More than 40% of transgender kids attempt suicide. I mean, it's almost half, which is just so shocking. So it was a really interesting conversation. He handled it so well with the parents being there. And then, you know, there was two F to M, female to male transgender men on the show. I guess I would call them men. One was a 16-year-old high school male, and one was a 22 or 21-year-old post-college male, and their moms. And, you know, just really interesting, the conversation, primarily through identification and through assessing the importance of a dialogue between parents and their kids. And then, of course, they did talk some about the medical, surgical, psychological challenges. You know, and it's interesting because the big topic that came up for, you know, many of these parents, for the parents of the younger girls, about the issue of middle school, of bathrooms, restrooms, and talking about, you know, how their schools were trying to find solutions for these kids and for the other kids. I mean, it's obviously a learning experience on both sides. So I just really applaud Anderson for doing that show and doing that show with such young children and handling that so well. I'm sure he will get a lot of flack for it, but I was very impressed. And as a member of the GLBT community, it is a conversation that needs to be had when, you know, it is the new frontier for us as a community, how we had these conversations and become inclusive of our transgender brothers and sisters. So way to go, Anderson. Also, I just have to say that Glee is going to get fun and messy for Brittany and Santana. Well, Santana especially. And I just am so, Naya Rivera is just, she's awesome. She has just, you know, I think the first 2 years we were all Kirk this, Kirk that. And this year to me, it's all about Santana. I mean, maybe I'm biased and it's all about the gay characters, but I think this is really going to be amazing to see how they're going to tell this story. And I guess for me, I don't think I was a mean girl. So if you went to high school with me and you thought I was a mean girl, I guess you can make a comment about that or just gossip about that. But I wasn't a mean girl and I wasn't a cheerleader, but I definitely was a very feminine girly girl, and a girly girl in high school who was very involved in a lot of things. And, you know, I think that coming out is something that is such a personal thing for all of us, like when that's going to happen. And, you know, I didn't come out to college, and I didn't even really come out to my friends or my peers, that the people that were my own age in college. You know, I grew up in the South, and that was not something that was extremely comfortable to do. And I didn't have examples of other people that I felt like were like me doing that. I definitely am so grateful that I had older gay and lesbian men and women in my life, because I was involved in the world of theater that were my touchstones when I was coming out and did give me community so that I kind of could stay closeted in college and kind of walk in both worlds, which was just what I felt I needed at the time. So, but I think it's going to be really, I mean, Glee has definitely done so much for a national debate about gender and sexuality. And they tell such specific stories that are so relatable. And so I think Santana's is going to be, one of those. And so it's going to be interesting to watch. Well, I am so excited that on today's show and coming up on a couple of shows, we're going to have some great ladies of music in the next couple of months. I got to tell you. But the great star of Broadway, Faith Prince, who has been somebody that I, you know, the first time I saw Faith Prince, you just think, oh my gosh, like I want her to be my friend. Like she seems like she's so funny and she's so talented, and that voice is so clear. And it just, I felt an affinity with her. She is so very accessible as an artist. And so I'm thrilled. I've never had the opportunity to interview Faith, and she is coming to Chicago again. She was here not too long ago at Northwestern, and she is coming back to Northwestern not only for a one night only show on December 3rd, but also to work with students at Northwestern. And I don't know. You might have to go to the website to see if you have to be a student to get in on the master class. But she is coming to town, and she's such a friend of the community. She has been, not only because of the work that she's, just because of her theatrical work, but the benefits and the way she has lent her voice to our causes with HIV/AIDS, as well as the GLBT equal rights and the issues that face our community. But she's just an all-around great Southern gal, and I love that. So I'm so excited to have Faith Prince on the show to explore the career of her music and what she is going to be bringing to Chicago here early in December. And in upcoming weeks, I will also be talking with dance diva Suzanne Palmer, who is also going to be strutting her stuff on the cabaret stage, a little different than she has in the past when she's been igniting the club scene. Plus, Richard Knight Jr.'s got a movie review for us as movies are kicking up, as we're heading way deep into this Oscar season. And somebody who is very much on the horizon of being the new It Girl, Elizabeth Olsen's new independent film with Sarah Paulson, is the review that Richard Knight is bringing to us. And so Richard Knight Jr. with us, Kirk Williamson, I'll be bringing you the GLBT news and also what's going on in the theater. Ugh, what do we not have to be grateful for? There are just so many things to be grateful for.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Weekend News.
The White House sent notice November 10th that it was withdrawing the nomination of openly gay attorney Edward Dumont to serve as the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit at his request. Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee blocked Dumont's nomination from the start when President Obama nominated him in April of 2010. In Dumont's place, Obama has nominated an attorney with strong Republican ties, Richard Taranto, a former law clerk for failed Supreme Court nominee and right-wing conservative Robert Bork, as well as Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor.
Columbia Law School Sexuality and Gender Law Clinic has won asylum in the United States for Ahmed A., a gay man who feared persecution because of his sexual orientation if he had been forced to return to his native Mauritania. The grant of asylum highlights the perils for gay people who live in the Islamic Republic of Mauritania, a country in West Africa. In Mauritania, homosexuality is punishable by death.
In Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a bisexual man has been charged with suffocating his 22-month-old son with a sock. Aaron Allen, age 19, was charged with first-degree intentional homicide. When asked about the child's death, Allen reportedly said he was struggling with his sexuality and that he wanted things to be the way they were before his son was born.
In Wyoming, high school football coach Pat Lynch has resigned following a scandal in which he distributed a survey to students that featured anti-gay and sexist comments. Lynch handed out the Hurt Feelings Report to football players. The survey featured options such as, I have woman-like hormones, I am queer, my butt is easily hurt, as reason for filing a report. Lynch issued a letter of apology citing his lack of judgment and the poor choice that I made for my position as head football coach for Buffalo High School.
In Detroit, the body of a missing transgender teen was in a morgue for weeks and was unclaimed. Henry Hilliard Jr., age 19, who went by the names Shelley and Treasure, disappeared on October 23rd. The medical examiner's office identified her burned torso on November 10th.
In Ohio, Delaware Christian School principal Gordon McDonald deleted former student David Emerson from the school's website after seeing that Emerson identified as gay on his Facebook profile. When Emerson called the school to speak with McDonald about reinstating him, McDonald reportedly said, "You are a gross and immoral representation of my school."
Hawaii is preparing for civil unions. Hundreds of LGBT people will say, "I do," on Waikiki Beach the night of December 31st as fireworks ignite the sky over Honolulu.
There is a sex abuse scandal at another college besides Penn State, the Citadel. John Rosa, the president of the South Carolina school, is profoundly sorry the military college failed to tell police about child sex abuse allegations against a man who was a summer camp counselor there. The Citadel released documents November 14th linked to the 2007 internal probe of those allegations against Lewis Neal Skip Reville. Reville worked at the school's camp from 2001 through 2003 and is charged with abusing five boys.
Out author and activist Dan Savage was glitter bombed the second time in November at the University of California, Irvine, where he was continuing his MTV tour. Two people threw glitter on Savage as he reportedly answered a woman's question about transgender porn with terms such as shemale and freaky tranny porn. The attackers allegedly said transphobe to Savage as they glitter bombed him. Savage laughed off the attack, saying he loves glitter because he's gay.
The Chubb Group of insurance companies has extended its medical benefits to transgender employees and dependents. 39% of Fortune 500 companies offer transgender-inclusive health benefits this year, up from 1% in 2004.
New research has found that LGBT youth who attended middle or high schools with gay-straight alliances, GSAs, have better mental health as young adults and are less likely to drop out of high school and are more likely to attend college. The study, High School Gay Straight Alliances and Young Adult Well-Being, is based on data from the Family Acceptance Project survey of 245 LGBT young adults between the ages of 21 and 25.
In Texas, transgender widow Nikki Araguz is appealing a judge's ruling that her marriage to firefighter Thomas Araguz was invalid, thus denying her his death benefit. Judge Randy Clapp ruled in May that because Nikki wasn't born biologically male, the marriage was not valid. Thomas's family says that the benefits, $600,000 worth, should go to the two children he had with a previous wife.
In Las Vegas, police have arrested a Tennessee man in the killing of a bartender. The victim, identified as Phil Wells, was shot at The Garage, a gay night spot. Tracy Kaufman, age 50, has been charged in Wells' death. The victim and accused killer were both from Knoxville, Tennessee, and may have lived together.
In New York, a jury found John Kitaeus guilty of second-degree murder in the 2009 killing of gay journalist George Weber. Kitaeus, who was 16 in 2009, placed a Craigslist ad offering oral sex for money. He and Weber, 47, met several days later, with Weber seeking to be tied up and smothered. However, Kitaeus also stabbed Weber 50 times. He will be sentenced December 7th.
The Massachusetts legislature has approved a transgender rights measure. The Senate okayed it on November 16th, the day after the House passed it, 95-38. Governor Deval Patrick said he would sign the bill, making Massachusetts the 16th state to treat transgender people as a protected class.
In world news, in Kyrgyzstan, a new law will allow transgender individuals to change their names and gender markers on official documents without proof of surgery or other medical intervention. 13 of the Central Asian countries' government ministries approved the measure. Now, only the prime minister needs to sign it for the law to go into effect.
In Pakistan, the transgender community celebrated a big victory as the country's Supreme Court ordered the federal government to register them as voters. Transgender Pakistanis have been campaigning for equal rights for years. However, it was only in 2010 that the government officially recognized them as a separate demographic.
Jean Villa, the mayor of the French town of Cabestany, has defied a national law by officiating the marriage of a same-sex couple. French law only allows for civil unions. However, the mayor did not enter the marriage in the official registry to avoid an annulment from being possible.
In Brazil, the government has made history by granting permanent residency to a non-citizen based on a same-sex relationship. Spaniard Antonio Vega Herrera, with his native Brazilian partner, can now reside in the country permanently thanks to a Supreme Court ruling.
In entertainment news, legendary entertainer Liza Minnelli underwent surgery in early November after breaking her foot. As a result, she could not attend the Police Athletic League's Women of the Year event held November 7th. However, she and openly gay Broadway figure Sam Harris are slated to perform two concerts at the famed Manhattan Jazz Club Birdland on November 20th and 21st.
Lady Gaga and stylist creative director Laurianne Gibson have split professionally in a breakup Summer describing as nasty. Gibson was apparently unhappy with the messages in Gaga's music videos, saying they were too sacrilegious. Gibson also reportedly made snide comments about Madonna heavily influencing Gaga. Gaga feels that Gibson is more interested in her own career now.
Taylor Garrett, one of the cast members of the Logo reality show The A-List Dallas, is claiming that he has been again attacked because of his affiliation with conservative pundit Ann Coulter. Garrett said he was attacked when he confronted a vandal who scratched "fuck Coulter" into his car. In October, Garrett, a gay Christian Republican, said that someone threw a rock through a window in his apartment after he had lunch with Coulter. The Democrats want me to live on their plantation as their slave because I'm a gay person, he said, and I refuse to do that.
Stephen Sondheim, Angela Lansbury, Joel Grey, and Mari Yeston are among those who will be inaugurating Legends of Broadway, Masterworks Broadway weekly series of newly produced video podcasts that premiered this past week. New videos will debut each Wednesday as free streaming content to anyone who signs up for the MasterworksBroadway.com e-newsletter.
And out-singer Ricky Martin has been granted Spanish citizenship after being recognized for artistic talents. Martin, 39, was given a letter of naturalization because of his connection to the country. Some believe Martin sought the citizenship because he plans to marry longtime partner Carlos Gonzalez in Spain, which legalized marriage equality in 2005. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
I'm Richard Knott Jr., and here's your Night at the Movies Minute. 29-year-old writer-director Sean Durkin and his leading lady, Elizabeth Olsen, younger sister of the infamous Olsen twins, both make arresting, stunning debuts in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. The critical hosannas greeting the movie are deserved, and both Durkin's film and Olsen's performance in it are hypnotic and profoundly disturbing. I think this psychological thriller is one of the year's best films. Olsen plays the multi-named leading character who has escaped the clutches of a seemingly benign hippie-like cult led by the charismatic Patrick, played by John Hawkes, who's never been better, and is now recovering from her ordeal at the Catskill Summer Lake house of her sister Lucy, played by out actor Sarah Paulson in a career-altering performance, and brother-in-law Ted, played by Hugh Dancy. The story moves back and forth seamlessly between Martha's attempted at recovery and the indeterminate period when she was a member of the cult. Device that builds tension to the breaking point by the film's startling conclusion. The character is called Martha by her sister. Marcy May is the name given her by the cult, and Marlene is the name the female cult members use when answering the phone, just to explain the title. Martha's unusual behavior becomes more pronounced as her paranoia and alternate longing for her adopted quote-unquote family kicks into high gear. Clearly, the relationship between the sisters has been fraught with problems, and there are emotional barriers between the two. But you keep waiting for the self-involved Sarah to ask for details about what happened to Martha, and when she doesn't, her lack of interest and true compassion seem to offer clues to Martha's indoctrination to the cult to begin with. Or do they? You're holding back, Patrick exhorts Marcy May at one point, demanding that she give herself to the cult mind, body, and soul, and chillingly, we see that she does as far as she's able to. What slowly becomes apparent in Durkin's low-key, naturalistic approach is that Martha, who clearly is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder or something similar, doesn't fit in either place. As Martha's jagged two worlds slowly begin to collide, the blank look in Martha's beautiful eyes that neither the sister nor the cult leader, nor the audience for that matter, ever seems to pierce, adds another level of ambiguity to this creepy, unforgettable little movie. I'm Richard Knott Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Minute.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at WindyCityQueerCast.com.
Culture. Club. Culture. Club. Culture. Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 21st, 2011, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Tony Award winner Faith Prince returns to Northwestern for a one-night-only event, Total Faith, Faith Prince in Concert. Dazzling audiences, Faith Prince brings to life her unforgettable and hilarious adventures through the songs of America's greatest composers. Faith Prince, one night only, Saturday, December 3rd at 7 o'clock at Conn Auditorium in Evanston. For tickets, visit tic.northwestern.edu.
The Chicago Human Rhythm Project presents Global Rhythm 7 this weekend. Only two performances. Saturday, November 26th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, November 27th at 7 p.m. at the Harris Theater. Enjoy the rhythm of the holidays with ground-shaking dance and music celebrating American and international percussive dance. Don't miss Step Africa, Ensemble Español, Spanish Dance Theater, and Mexican Folklore Dance Company in Chicago. For tickets, visit chicagotap.org.
Steppenwolf Theater presents Penelope, featuring John Mahoney. Locked in a do-or-die competition, four Speedo-clad men connive to win the love of the beautiful Penelope. Penelope starts December 1st and runs through February 5th. Tickets start at just $30. For tickets, visit steppenwolf.org.
Court Theater proudly presents a legendary 10-year account of the Trojan War and Iliad. This one-man adaptation was created by Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare of TV's True Blood. An epic poem that takes a look at the human cost of war. Get your tickets now by visiting courttheater.org. And Iliad is playing now through December 7th at Court Theater, 5535 South Ellis Avenue. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
I am the toast of the town I once boasted. I, in my elegant gown, was most toasted. But now my toast, if I even have bread, is burnt. And so now I boast that this lesson instead I have learnt. Never shun whatever comes my way. Other people plan, other people plot. I do what I can with what I got.
Faith Prince is a true Broadway star, from her Tony Award-winning role as Adelaide in the revival of Guys and Dolls to her recent turn in A Catered Affair. She has also had an amazing solo career performing with the Boston Pops, the Utah Symphony, Cincinnati Pops, the Philly Pops. She's been very poppy. And now she comes to Chicago, to the Northwestern campus, in a new one-woman show that is all Faith Prince for one night only. It's called Total Faith. And we're just thrilled to have her here on the podcast for the very first time. Hey, Faith, how are you?
Hey, Amy. Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to say, being a Southerner living out of the South, I love to talk to fellow Southern folk. So tell me where you were born, or tell our listeners where you were born.
I was actually born in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah.
And I lived there till I was six. And then my family moved to Lynchburg, Virginia. And
yeah.
I was raised there and till I hit high school and 17. And then I went to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music in Ohio.
And then you left.
And then I left.
Do you still feel like a Southerner at heart?
Well, you know, I talk about this in my shows. It's so funny because everybody always thinks I'm a, you know, New York gal.
Mm-hmm.
And I got invited to do so many, actually, New York Jewish galas. And I didn't have the heart to tell them I was Southern Presbyterian. So I just told them I was busy.
Well, it is true. You know, I've talked about this for years on the radio, but I was never proud to be a Southerner until I moved out of the South. And then instantly I started listening to country music and wanted my first pair of cowboy boots. But when I lived there, I would have never thought that. So it was shocking to me when I came to Chicago and I was trying to find anything to tether me to the South.
Well, that's the beauty of it. You know, I loved being raised there and there was a gentility
mm-hmm.
that I loved. But there was also like a non-frankness that yeah. I needed to get from New York
yep.
because I wanted to be, I don't even know if that's a word, non-frankness, but you
it
know what
now.
I'm saying.
I like it.
There was something I needed to sort of execute because I liked people who said exactly what they meant.
Right.
So I've tried to merge the two, and I always feel like I take my manners with me,
mm-hmm.
but from the South, but when I meet in a situation, if I need to hold my ground or just get through or bulldoze,
right.
the New Yorker in me comes out.
Yeah.
And that isn't to say that New Yorkers aren't, you know, pleasant. I mean, honestly, it's misconstrued because you ask a New Yorker on the street, they
right.
will help you every single time. They're just to the point. They're
yep.
quick. Yep. And they have to keep moving. So I like to think of myself as gracious with an edge.
I like that. That can be your next show, gracious with an edge. I like it.
That's right.
Well, it's totally true, though, right? Because, you know, New Yorkers are clear and direct and economical. And Southerners have all the time in the world. And it's very circuitous.
And you put a different drum, you know?
Right, exactly. Did the South... was that landscape and that environment a place where your earliest musical influences came from, or were you really already seeking outside and finding musical influences?
It's funny you should say that. I actually think it really informs my act, because I think by nature, when you're raised in the South, they are huge storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of my act is singing, but it's also sort of anecdotal and telling stories and sort of recalling certain events, and then the songs come in through those events.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that storytelling came from my ancestors in the South. It was sort of in the water down there.
Yep.
And I think that just made me who I was. And it's so funny, when you do concerts or cabaret, you don't know exactly how your persona is going to sort of emerge.
Yeah.
And I had always loved being other people. That's why I like being an actress.
Mm-hmm.
I love to immerse myself into somebody else's sort of personality with me in there somewhere. But when you do an act, it is you.
Yeah.
And so the first time I had done it was like 1999. People had been after me for years, and I was like, oh gosh, I just don't think I can do that. And so I got these wonderful writers, and of course I have Alex Rybak, who I still have as my pianist, and Daisy Prince was directing it, and Stuart Roth, who had done Forever Plaid, did the original, helping me put it together. And of course they got me out there, and they couldn't shut me up, you know, because it was just, I just felt like I'd found my home. I was just like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
Yeah, that's when you need to work a piano bar for like a 3-hour set. You know, that's when you just really want to sit down. People have cocktails, and you just talk until we all go home and sing.
Absolutely. And honestly, even when I played Carnegie Hall with the New York Pops, or did something with the Gaiman's Chorus, honestly, people would say, you know what? I feel like I'm in your living room. And I went, but it's Carnegie Hall.
Yeah. Well, some fabulous men might feel like Carnegie Hall is their living room. You know, you never know.
Exactly. You know, but I think my point was, that's just my way in. And everybody has to find their way in. And for me, it was like somebody was sitting in my living room, and I go, oh God, the funniest thing happened the other day.
Yeah.
You know, and off and running.
Yeah.
And just occasionally, and it's so beautiful because Alex just sculpts everything, both within the music and around it.
Mm.
And it's, I don't know, I always say I can tell any story as long as there's piano underneath it, you know?
As long as it's underscored, I've got a story for you. Well,
absolutely.
Because obviously, you know, our audience is the GLBT community. I really want to just start for a moment, because this year, our newspaper, our podcast, much of what we've done here in Chicago has really acknowledged a year-long conversation about this being the 30th anniversary of the advent of HIV/AIDS. And Falsetto Land is such a huge work to kind of set a tone of telling those stories early on. Did you realize how revolutionary that show is going to be? And can you really understand its power and presence in the history of kind of the AIDS play or the AIDS story being told by us?
Yeah, I absolutely. I can't tell you how honored I was to be a part of it. Honestly, when I got the call for the audition, I thought I was going to audition for one of the lesbians from next door.
Right.
And James Lapine called me home, and he and I, up to that point, had never worked together. I'd auditioned for him a few times, but he called me at home, and he said, no, I don't want you to come in for the lesbians from next door. He said, I would like you to be Trina.
Mm.
And I was just like, really? And he said, yeah, I really think you'd be a great Trina. And of course, I'd known Alison Frazier and loved her, and I knew she had done it, but she was doing something else. And I was like, wow, James, I said, you know, I'm not trusting your instincts, but I'm just, I'm sort of gobsmacked. I don't know. I had my head around the lesbians who are next door. He said, no, I want you to take this. I think it's going to be a great role for you. Mm-hmm. And so honestly, I just went into it. And what was great is because Chick and Michael and Steven had all had this chemistry and shorthand and with Billy and James, I felt like I was sort of walking into a book that had a prior chapter,
mm-hmm.
and which it did,
yes.
You know, marks the falsettos. But I could tell, and honestly, I think it's one of my strengths, because this happens when I do a television show that's up and running, if you do a guest spot or if you replace somebody,
right.
You have to walk in and sense the tone of the piece and the tone of the room. And you're not really there to change it. You're there to fit in as yourself, but
yes.
You have to sort of take on whatever that is. And it was really powerful. And mm-hmm. I could tell it was really something special because of the way James talked about it. He
right.
just said, I don't know what we have here, but it feels honest and it feels like we're going to get out there, and I'm not sure which way it's going to go, but
right.
we're all going to be in this together, and we're all on the same page. And he said, I couldn't be more proud of what we have to offer. And honestly, when we started it, it was just, I have never heard so much emotion.
Yeah.
Like, people could not stop themselves.
Yeah. I mean,
it just hit a nerve that was really palpable and powerful.
Yeah. I mean, so much was being created. I mean, obviously, there's been the revivals of Normal Heart and Angels in America. And
right.
And I just think, you know, all of these stories came out of something so visceral and so powerful
right.
that needed to be said. But Falsetto
well,
Land had such a wonderful balance, too, of bringing musicality to it and humor to it and family to it in such
exactly.
a way
and
that
Billy,
was so great.
Billy has a voice that... I don't know. He has so much humanity in
mm-hmm.
that man, and with James
mm-hmm.
and with Michael Sturban. You know, there was something magical there, and it was so palpable because he just kept it very delicately in the air, spinning.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take it, and
right.
you could understand the story and understand how people's families were different than
yeah.
what they used to be. And
yep.
they were dealing with very different things,
right.
you know? And I can't tell you how I'm sort of bonded to those people for life, Heather
yes.
and everybody, you know?
Yeah.
But just, I don't know. It is looking back on it. And sometimes people will stop me and say, I just love holding to the ground, you know? And I'm like, oh my God. Oh yeah. I did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, it just kind of suddenly it washes all over you all over again. So
right.
I'm extremely proud. And I know how much that means, in many communities,
right.
you know, and I just was proud to be a part of it.
Well,
it
and you
great
you
ensemble.
Have just had such a career that has, I mean, I think it's one of the great things of maybe not being the traditional ingenue, you know, to be a great character actress and a great performer who's a great actor as well as singer. And, you know, that, you know, you're obviously slam dunk with the Tony Drama Desk and Outer Critics Circle Award all for Adelaide for Guys and Dolls. You know, is we go, okay, that's one person, one star. And then, you know, you slip into this, to a catered affair, which is something wholly different.
Right.
You know, in working with Harvey and John Boccaccino, how was it to work with those guys on a catered affair? I think that it's,
well, it was very interesting. I think, also you have to mix in John Doyle in there.
Uh-huh.
And for me, there's something, so when I met John, because I just talked to him over the phone, and he could tell from the phone call that he was just like, you're the one for me, you know, and because
mm-hmm.
I think through Harvey and through John, I had known the two of them. Obviously, Harvey and I had done some things with Damon's Chorus in Seattle and
mm-hmm.
Different galas and stuff, but we'd never done a show together. But when I talked to John Doyle, I could tell he was going to be the person that was going to lead me into this world and really show me some very different things than I had ever done, and gave me the courage to really to try
that tone and to create sort of a canvas for musicals that was very different.
Yeah.
And I loved every single second of it. And the way he works and just a lot of repetition so that by the time you get to a preview and you walk on that stage, you are so comfortable because you have done it every which way but loose, you know? And
Was it scary kind of stripping away, though, the prince, quote unquote?
Yes.
I mean, to really strip away the things that the people expected from seeing you in Jerome Robbins or seeing you as Adelaide or seeing you as, Noises Off.
For it.
You were ready.
You know what? I was so ready for it. I've always kind of reinvented myself over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I've gone different ways. And honestly, it may be the thing that has kept me from being a major star in a way, because I have so many loves of different things. But honestly, I have no regrets. It's like, I feel like I'm just getting started in a way, because I was always an old soul.
Yeah.
You know, I played an old stripper, Desi Tour at 25, you know, and I feel like I'm just now at the age where all those women, you know, are deliciously, you know, full of piss and vinegar and no filter and, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's a diving board, a platform to really jump into the world that I was always meant to be a part of.
Well, we believe you're a major star now, but definitely the move.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I
don't even know, like a,
I think it's a major star when you've worn a Tony, a Drama Desk, and an Outer Critic Circle and done all these Broadway shows. I think you're a pretty major star, Faith. But
I've had an interesting, it's been eclectic and wonderful. And honestly, there's never been one thing that I've taken that I thought, oh, gotta make the money, you know, gotta do the commercial thing. And I really have handpicked everything that really suited me and what I wanted to express and the things I wanted to try and where I wanted to go. And honestly, where I'm at now too, is I really, you know why I'm coming to Northwestern is to also give a master class to those kids. And when I went there before, Heather Schmucker was just instrumental in bringing me back. And I said, it would just be great if I could do sort of my act and get to know them, but also for them to get to know me so that when we go back into the room together, we have a dialogue and they know the kind of work. Not that my work is the only way, but it's a way in.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm really into now is just giving back and helping somebody else get to their center and find out how they want to express themselves, because it's the most important thing.
I don't think you can be more successful than what you've just described, you know, to feel like you didn't have to take a work for money, that you've had a career that, you know, is continuing. I mean, your career's not done by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh my God,
and,
no, I feel like
and,
I'm just starting.
And now the generosity to give it back, you know, the generosity to feel like you have an experience
honestly,
to share.
That's my new favorite passion, is to get up there and to look at somebody else and be there totally to sort of help them, because it's just like this little puzzle and it's like, how can we bring this out and what can we do with this? And it's just so much fun. A couple summers ago, I taught at Yale for 10 days at this Cabaret International workshop that Alex sort of, he said, I want you to come do this. Amanda McBroom had fallen out. She had something. And he said, you've got to come do this. And I went and oh my God, I felt like somebody had opened jar of the top of my head, and I was like, this is the most fantastic thing I have ever been a part of. And to see how those people changed in 10 days, and I just loved it. I felt like, I don't know, it was amazing. I can't even talk about it. I love it so much. But now I do this a lot and do master classes along with my work, and I'm writing a book on it so I can help other people find routes to do the arts and to get out there. And I don't know. I feel like my whole world has just opened up
in a
totally different way.
Well, is that informing what this show, Total Faith? I mean, you had a show, Leap of Faith, for Ed Joe's Pub, but now it's, you've gone from the leap to totally, you're totally in, which is, which is a big concept.
The leap was the first time, and now I'm just sort of really in it. But it's just stories and anecdotes. And I feel like what I've got to offer, it's like Heather said last time, she said, I got so many emails from students that said, oh my God, if like faith found a way in, I can find a way in. And that's what I'm here to sort of represent. It's not beyond anybody, you know? It's just, if this is your true love, if this is your true passion, you will know it.
Yeah.
You know, you will know if it's working for you. And I always tell parents, because parents write me all the time and say, oh, tell my kid how hard the business is. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to tell them that. They're going to find that out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if they really want to do this, they will do it.
Yeah.
And you will support them.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it could, down the road, really bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
And I said, it's what I try to do with my own child.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and by giving them the confidence and the power to really know their gut decisions, they will find their path. Even if it's not performing, it could be something down the line. It could be reporting. It could be, you know, being a party planner. It could be working for public relations in the government. You know, you don't know.
Well, and the arts and passion about anything leads you to, you know, being useful and finding what you're supposed to do and being experiencing the human experience. I mean, that's what I love about the arts in general. What are some of the composers
that... And that's why I feel so strongly about arts in schools, you know, and any time that they let those down, they are really doing a disservice to the children.
Absolutely.
In so many ways, they have no idea.
Absolutely.
So I'm an advocate for that. And I don't know, I just... Every day I wake up and I cannot wait to see what the world, you know, just holds. And I just put one foot in front of the other and just choose what my instincts say. And I just, I still follow that voice. And that's a voice I had as a little girl.
Yeah.
And honestly, if somebody had said, you are going to do this, this, and this, I never would have thought it. And at the time I kept saying, gosh, I don't feel ready for that yet. And the voice kept saying, oh, but when you get there, you will be.
Mm.
And it was true.
Mm. You're a teacher, Faith Prince.
Well,
you are
I love
a teacher.
It. If I can help anybody, I really, honestly, my life will be complete.
Yeah.
Really. If I can give back and make a difference in some other people's lives, then I'll feel good about that. That I can live with.
Yeah. Well, that's something we all should be able to want to live with. Tell me just real quickly, for people who want to come up and see the show, who are some of the composers that will be featured in Total Faith?
See. Everything from Lerner and Lowe, Julie Stein, John Bacchino, possibly. You know, we have like four shows that we put together, one show, and I design it for each place that I'm going.
Right.
And so Alex and I are just in the midst of sort of putting those, you know, you've got chunks and chunks and chunks, and then you put them together specifically for Northwestern.
Oh, wow.
But it will be, you know, classic American musical theater. It will be some new stuff. I think I have a song of Alex's in there that's beautiful. I have a little Candor and Ebb, some classic Candor and Ebb. I have, gosh, I have so many things. I have a little jazz in there.
Good.
I have a little Rodgers and Hart. I've got a little bit of everything for somebody.
Yeah, it sounds like
it. And Jerry Herman.
Yep.
Definitely some Jerry Herman.
Mm.
And a little Maltby and Shire.
And of course. Oh, well, that's right up your... It's right in your wheelhouse, their stuff.
Absolutely.
The storytelling. So now you talk about you're from the South. What you kind of absorbed by becoming a New Yorker so well that people thought you were a New Yorker. Now you're living in California, and obviously you're popping up on television shows and film projects and all of that. What are you working on now? Where are we going to see you? And for those listeners who can't get to Chicago, who listen from around the U.S. and the world to the podcast, you know. Where are they going to start spotting you, either on the tube or somewhere else?
Well, I definitely have been doing a lot of, well, first of all, I just got off the road with Billy Elliot for a year.
Yeah.
I did the national tour of Billy Elliot, which a role that I just...
What an inspirational show. Talk about everything you've been mentioning.
I loved the kids.
Yeah.
I loved being a part of that show.
Inspired.
I love the people that put it together. I mean, Julian Weber, who worked under Stephen Daldry, I just think is a genius director.
Yeah.
I learned so much, and it was really, really hard because I'd never really done ballet.
Yep.
So I had to learn a lot of different things, and, you know, they say you can't teach a
old dog, new tricks. Well, guess what? You can't. And honey, I was moving that body, and I did not miss one show the whole year, I want you to know.
Good for you. But,
so I just came off of that, and I just shot last week a Happy Endings, which is on ABC. And it's such a well-written comedy. And I'm playing a Penny's therapist, Stacey.
right?
Stacey's therapist, Rod. And before that, I just shot A Gifted Man in New York with Patrick Wilson, who's delicious.
Yes.
And, you know, and he's an old musical theater.
Yes.
People
and
don't know.
Angels in America on HBO.
I know. Well, my neighbor out here goes, he sings? And I go, does he sing? Oh, my God, does he sing?
Yeah.
And so I loved being with him. It's the first time I'd had a heart attack on television. But that's going to be airing Friday night, actually, on CBS.
Good.
So, I've done a lot on television. The best show I ever did was a show called Huff that ended too soon.
Yes,
and
that was
with
HBO,
Hank Azaria,
right?
And
HBO?
Oliver Platt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was for Showtime.
I'm Showtime.
But
so
I still mourn two more seasons of that because it was the writing. Bob Lowry, who was the executive producer on that, was amazing. But, you know, I love television. I love film. I love animation. I love it all.
Yeah.
I really do. And a lot of times I do a lot of dramas, but then I'll turn around and do this wacky comedy. That's what's fun for me. Because then I can really pull out my skill set. And I go, ooh, okay, I get to use these knives, you know, these forks, you know, these tools. And it's really, I'm telling you, I still have fun. People go, I can't believe you're this excited at 54. I go, wait till you see me at 74.
Well, I hope that we're still talking to you and that you're coming back to Chicago and doing shows. And everybody, I hope you know that you just don't want to miss this. It's only one night. So you got to put
it
down on your calendar now.
We are going to have some fun.
That's right. It's December 3rd. What a way to like kick off the holiday season. And do not miss this one night only. Total Faith Prince in concert. It's the Kahn Auditorium right on the Evanston campus of Northwestern, 600 Emerson Street. And it's
and
at 7
I
o'clock.
Promise, no boredom.
No, well, we already know that. We're going to get a lesson. I feel like I should bring my notebook and my pen, you know, and know that I'm going to get some very sage advice and some great storytelling. But if you want tickets, folks,
it'll be a lot of fun.
It's going to be. For tickets, they're only $40 for the public, $30 for TIC subscribers and Northwestern faculty staff. There are some $10 tickets available to full-time students with a valid ID. So if you want all the information, we'll have the phone number and the website linked in our show notes. But the website is tic.northwestern.edu. Faith Prince, Total Faith, in concert at the Kahn Auditorium on December 3rd. Faith, thank you so much. It's been so delightful. And I might have to sneak into that master class now.
Oh,
now
that Amy, I would love for you to be there. Really would.
I'll bring some good Southern food for you.
Honey, I could bring my biscuits.
We'll compare some biscuits and maybe some chow chow. So,
other
people don't know what that is.
But we do. That's all that's important.
That's all that's important. Faith Prince, thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you had a great week. I hope you're having a good long weekend ahead to spend with family and friends. And I look forward to being back with you on the cusp of the final month of the year as we head into December. So much love to all of you. I'm very grateful that you listen, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.